Thank you, Caleb, for reading for us. I was afraid I was going to have to get a lesson there real quick, and I was taking notes hurriedly, but thank you for getting over there, because this lesson will go much better the way it was planned. So appreciate all the guys that help out with their service, and they do a good job. And sometimes we take that for granted, but it runs seamlessly, and I appreciate the guys that do that and help out. We are looking at Genesis this morning. We're going to spend the most of our time in chapter 35. We've kind of, these last few weeks, hit some of the highlights. We've spent, really, I guess this entire quarter. We started in January. This is the last, the calendar quarter, the last week in March. And we've looked at some of the different stories. And we're doing this, of course, in conjunction with our kids that are going to LTC in just a few weeks. It'll be in just a couple of weeks. So they're making some final preparations. We've been hitting the highlights, and I know those that have been studying for the both the Bible Bowl and the Bible Quiz have been looking at the details. So a lot of time has been put into this book by our kids, so they hopefully have gained much from it, as we have as we've gone through these different lessons. A few years back on the CNN website, they featured an article about Frank Warren. And he was the editor of a book entitled The Secret Lives of Men and Women, which is a post-secret book. And after a troubling period in his own life, he decided to write this book, or to compile this book, basically, is what he did. And he handed out 3,000 self-addressed stamped postcards to people on the street. Just those he would meet in his everyday walk of life. And he would hand them out and ask them to fill out that card and send it back with some sort of secret in their life. Maybe the one they wouldn't just share with just anyone, but would be willing to write down on this card and then send it back. Well, this sort of started as a public art project way back in 2004. And to his surprise, the cards started pouring back in. I guess first thought, he maybe thought, well, if I can get half of them back, I'll be doing good. But of the original 3,000, that kind of caught on, and before long, he had received over 100,000 postcards and letters with different secrets that people were sharing. He used part of those in his work. This led to a website called postsecret.com, and there are now many sites like this, where you can confess your sins or simply tell your deepest secret anonymously. I got on that site. I'd never heard of it before until reading this little piece about Frank Warren. And sure enough, you can see a lot of different cards that have been sent back in with those different secrets. One postcard had an old picture of a Santa Claus with two boys on his lap. And on the picture were written the words, "I wish my sons would contact me." There was another postcard that simply, where a man had taken a picture of his hands praying, and then on the picture he had written, "I don't know how to go back to God, and I want to more than anything else in this world." You know, if you think about those two cards, they both have something in common. They're both someone looking for their way back home. In one instance, it was a father hoping his sons would find their way back home. In the other instance, it was a son looking for his way back home to his father. What is it that makes it difficult for us to find our way back home? What is that that makes that difficult? I think it's probably just the natural rebellion in the human heart. And if we could have interviewed the prodigal son, we remember that story, we've read that story. We remember the way that he left his family, went out, set out on his own, and very quickly went through all that he had. But if we could ask him that question, what would some of those answers be? Son, why was it hard to come back home? Well, there's probably pride, maybe just some plain old stubbornness, a lot of different things that maybe crept into his life. Maybe he just needed to get away, get a change of scenery. Jacob sort of did that same thing. We're going to look at his story this morning in a little bit more detail. Jacob has been described as one of the strangest characters in the Bible. Some have even said that he's the worst and the best man in the Old Testament. If you look at his life, the stories surrounding his life, maybe you would agree with that. We see him cheating his brother Esau, This is when he's at his worst. And then we hear him making his vows unto God after his vision that we read there in chapter 28 just a few moments ago. This is where he's at his best. The life of Jacob is an interesting read for many different reasons. And almost every type of person imaginable can find something that they have in common with Jacob. It might just be the simple fact that you're a parent, and so was Jacob. Many in our audience this morning who are of the adult age are either parents or will be at some point in their life and understand the idea of parenting and some of the things that Jacob might have gone through there. But let me recap just a little bit of his life for you this morning. Jacob and Esau, of course, were twin boys of Isaac, the son of Abraham. Jacob was the younger and probably the more devious of the two as we read about his life and some of the different things that he was a part of. Jacob was more interested in things around the home. He enjoyed the cooking, the cleaning, some of the things that had to do with the household. He helped his mother probably do these things. Esau was more out with his father doing the things that the dad would do, whether that was the hunting, the fishing, whatever might have been the activity in that day and age. And as you'll remember, Jacob stole both the birthright and the blessing from his older brother, and he basically had to run for his life after doing so. Rebekah, his mother, took care of him. And she had heard that Esau was about to kill Jacob. She asks Isaac to send Jacob out to a town to find his wife, or to find a wife, and possibly to spare his own life, with Rebekah being concerned that Esau would kill him. Well, as the story goes, of course, along the way, Jacob stops at this place called Luz to spend the night. That's where we were reading there in chapter 28. Placing his head on a rock in a dream, then Jacob received a vision or a word from God. And you know, when morning came, Jacob set the stone as a marker. He made a commitment to God at that time and place, and he renamed Luz, calling it Bethel. And in the Hebrew language, the word Beth literally means the house, and the suffix El means God. So the literal meaning of the name was, or the place, was the house of God. And of course, if you remember, he continued his journey. Didn't stop there. He met and fell in love with the younger of his uncle Laban's daughters. Her name was Rachel, and he struck a deal with Laban that he was to work 7 years for Rachel. And behold, Jacob wasn't the only deceiver in the family, was he? We know that story of how he didn't get Rachel after the first 7 years and had to continue to work another time period or period of time to gain her as his wife. During this time, there's really two things that happened. Both Laban and Jacob became wealthy, and Jacob fathered 12 sons or 12 boys. But these blessings caused a problem. Can we start relating to that? Is this where maybe we can start relating to this story? The blessings caused a problem. Basically, Laban's sons were saying, the pastures aren't big enough for the two of you, meaning Laban and Jacob. So Jacob called his family together, and they met, and he told them it was time for them to go home. Again, he had experienced God in a dream, and in his dream, God gave Jacob a specific call. And there in chapter 31, in verse 13, it says, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. And in our text, Jacob goes back to Bethel. And as he does, we're reminded of his previous vow made there in chapter 28. Caleb read through verse 17. I want to go back and pick up at verse 20 and read just a couple of more verses before we get to chapter 35. But there in chapter 28, beginning at verse 20, it says, Then Jacob made a vow saying, If God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. And this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. Now flip back over to chapter 35. We're going to spend some time in that chapter this morning, looking at the first 13 verses, and I want to make some observations. Some observations of this return back home. This return back to God, if you'll look at it in those terms. And, you know, if we look at the name Bethel, it means house of God. Now, to Abraham and Jacob, Bethel was a specific place on the map of Canaan. If you look at that map, you'll see it. It was located about 30 miles south of Shechem and about 5 miles north of Jerusalem. It was at a little bit higher elevation than that of Shechem and situated on the road that led to Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Hebron. Now, to us, what does Bethel represent? It represents a right relationship with God. Coming back home. Coming back to the right place. God told Jacob, come back to Bethel. This is where you need to be. This is the way back. Are there times in our lives where we feel closer to God than other times? Of course there are. Just a part of life. We're living that life. We understand that life. We're going through that life day in and day out. And there are times that we think it's maybe a bit of this. But what direction are we headed in each and every day? We can sometimes have these ups and downs and still be headed in the right direction. And I think that's what we see exactly from the life of Jacob. Jacob didn't do everything right. Jacob made some mistakes, but God said, come back. Come back to me. Come back to the land of Bethel. Return home. And that's what we're looking at this morning. You know, as we view Jacob returning to Bethel in a right relationship with God, we can make some important observations for our own lives. And that's what I'd like to do with the remainder of our time this morning. Let's look at Jacob's return to Bethel. How can we apply that to us? Where's the application? And I think if we look at these verses, we can see some very practical things. First observation, the journey back to Bethel begins when we once again hear and obey the voice of God. Look at verse 1. And God said unto Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fled from the face of Esau thy brother. Way back in the house of Laban in Genesis 31 and 3, the Lord spoke to Jacob and said, return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. Have you heard that voice in your life before? The voice of God calling you? Many of you here in this audience have. You've heard that. You responded to that invitation. But sometimes along the way, we may lose sight. We may lose direction. We may need a general reminder. Hey, come back. Come back. Sometimes God speaks to us in ways that we hear Him loudly. Maybe in our distress, we hear Him. Maybe in our pleasure, we turn away. But the Lord got Jacob's attention. The trouble at Shechem had brought him to his knees and had unplugged his ears. Someone has said that God never makes us do the right thing, but He sure knows how to motivate us or to make us willing to do the right thing. C.S. Lewis was quoted as saying, God whispers to us in our pleasure and He shouts to us in our pain. Can we relate with that? We probably can, can't we? But are we hearing the voice this morning? The way back began once Jacob heard that voice and began to obey the voice of God. I think a second observation, as we continue here through chapter 35, the journey back to Bethel begins when we are ready to deal with our sin and purify our hearts and lives. That's a choice we make, isn't it? Jacob chose to do that. He chose to take that journey. Notice there in verse 2 of chapter 35. Then Jacob said unto his household and to all that were with him, put away the strange gods that are among you and be clean and change your garments. You know, immediately Jacob knows that he can't return to Bethel in his present state and things are going to have to change. Maybe you've seen that in your life sometime. Some changes that need to be made to get back in that direction, back in that path that God has left for us. Jacob was dealing with idols. I think we can see that plainly. This is just another instance here. More evidence that Jacob was raising a semi-pagan family. These were strange gods, those belonging to the stranger or the strange land. Maybe some of the idols that have included in the family of Rachel. We don't know for sure, but in our life today, what's an idol? We get a glimpse of that in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 21. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Many things can be idols today, can they not? We know that. We've talked about that. We understand that. We constantly guard against that. But where's your treasure this morning? There were some entanglements as well. Notice verse 4. And they gave unto Jacob all their strange gods which were in their hand, and all their earrings which were in their ears. And Jacob hid them under the oak which was by Shechem. Uses the phrase earrings, or that was part of what they had given up. Were these just pieces of jewelry that were worn? In this day and age, there was a bit more to it than that. Earrings came in various forms and sizes and materials, and were universally worn in the East, being connected with idolatry. So once again, showing what had hold of their lives. What was controlling them? They weren't looking to God. They were looking in other directions. You know, I wonder if in today's world we don't sometimes try to blend in. Say, well, you know, I don't want to stand out. I don't want to cause any waves. I don't want to cause any problems. I'm just going to kind of go along with the crowd and everything will be okay. Jacob's family was blending in, were they not? God called them out, said, don't blend in, be different. Be a special people. You have different goals, a different direction. How many things do we allow in our lives that send a mixed message to a lost world? How many things do we allow in our lives that actually war with our soul? We so often play with things that we shouldn't. We so often do things and we think, well, I know maybe this isn't right, but I'm going to go ahead. God says, come back. He was calling Jacob's family back. Jacob took the things that stood in the way of his returning to Bethel. He hid them under a towering oak tree. You know, these trees were remarkable for their longevity. Therefore, they served as a reminder to them and the future generations. The oak became a consecrated tree bearing testimony to the repentance and their return to God. Just a symbol, but he buried that under that mighty tree. He said, now we can return. We've put some things behind us. We can go on. You know, I think sometimes it's good for us to make a public act of repentance or rededication or confession. It becomes, in effect, an oak or a memorial to ourselves and to others of our commitment to follow Christ. And we've had people do that here in our own body. They'll come forward asking for prayers or asking for forgiveness. I want to put my past behind me. I want to bury it under that tree and be able to go and follow. The church is a place we can do that. This body that we have is a place, and it should be. We have such a loving group of Christians here. And very rarely, in fact, never do you see someone come to the front and sit alone. They're surrounded by those that love them and care for them. At least that's the way a church should be, isn't it? You know, hospitals have acquired infections, and that's one of the leading causes of death in the United States hospitals today. These infections are either the direct or the indirect cause, they say, of 80,000 fatalities each and every year. And as many as one-third of these deaths could be prevented if healthcare workers strictly followed the infection control procedures. Of those precautionary measures, actually the hand washing may be the single most important tool of infection prevention. Studies suggest that healthcare workers wash their hands less than half as often as they should. I know we've got healthcare workers here, and ours wash their hands twice as much as they should. I just know they do. But in this study of healthcare workers nationwide, this was conducted at the Southwestern Medical School in Dallas. Dr. Robert Haley, the director there, said patients come into the hospitals to be made better, and they actually, in many cases, are made worse. You know, churches are frequently compared to a hospital. People are looking for a safe haven to find God, but sometimes our churches send them out with even a greater illness. That can't happen. We need to rally around. We need to support one another. We need to love one another. We need to forgive one another as God forgives. James chapter 4 and verse 8, draw nigh to God and He will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your heart, ye double-minded. As a church, we need to be drawing nigh to God. As an individual, also. Third observation, as we go through this chapter, our journey back to Bethel has a great impact on others around us. Notice verse 6. So Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan. That is Bethel. He and all the people that were with him. God called Jacob, and that included several. His family, those that were a part of his family, were with him also. I think this is a call to parents, a call to leaders, a call to fathers to lead in the right direction. We do influence others. We can't deny that in any way. We have an impact on the lives of others. William Arthur said, every person has the power to make others happy. One does it simply by entering a room, another by leaving the room. So one way or another, we're going to affect people. We're going to impact people. We're going to make them happy or sad. Someone is following us. We must remember that. A fourth observation. When we go back to Bethel, we can be assured of God's presence and protection. Jacob was running scared during part of his life, fearful for his own life, that Esau would take his life. Notice here in verse 5, and they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. Why is it often hard for us to return home? Are we fearful of what others might say? Fearful of others, what they might think of us? Well, what's going on in his or her life? What kind of problems are they having? We're not to fear men, we're to fear God. Jacob realizing that finally in his return to this land. A fifth observation. Bethel is a place of revival and restoration. Verse 7, and he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. A place of revival. A place where we can be restored. A sixth observation. Bethel is a place of reconciliation with God's people. Verse 8, but Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried beneath Bethel under an oak, and the name of it was called Elon Bakuth. You know, this is a little bit strange. Suddenly the name Deborah here appears, this Rebekah's nurse. This could suggest that there may have been some contact or a reunion of sorts between Jacob and his father's house at this time. Bethel, the house of God, is synonymous with the people of God. The Lord's church is more an assembly of people than it is a place, a location, or building. We realize that. What an important part of this process, Jacob being reconciled. Whoops, wrong way, I'm sorry. Going down to the seventh. Bethel is a place reconnecting with God's purpose. Let's continue our reading and finish out through verse 13, beginning there at verse 9. And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Padanaram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee. The king shall come out of thy loins, and the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he talked with him. Here Jacob is reminded once again that the covenant promise is still in effect, and he has a role to play in fleshing out this promise. What a wonderful thing. Here Jacob has gone different directions, taken different paths. God said, I'm still here. My promises are still the same. The covenant is still the same. Nothing's changed, only you took a different direction. Come back to Bethel. Come back to your first love. Come back home. Genesis, a book of faith. Many wonderful stories that we can learn. And I think it asks and challenges us, especially in this story of coming back to your first love. A man once stood before God, his heart breaking from the pain and the injustice he thought he was dealing with in this world. Dear God, he cried out, Look at all the suffering, the anguish, and the distress in your world. Why don't you send someone to help me?" God responded, "I did send help. I sent you." So often we're looking in other directions, aren't we? We're looking for help elsewhere. God said, "I sent you. You help out. You bring others back. Be like Jacob. Take that stand. Return to Bethel." So the question this morning, of course, which direction are you headed? Where are you this morning in your path? Only you can answer that other than God. God knows the answer to that. Many here this morning have taken that first step. You've made that first commitment. You've put on Christ through baptism. Had the privilege of speaking at a funeral on Friday, the funeral of Archie Gold, of course, the father of Dina, and I asked her permission to share this story. She's here with us this morning, but I thought it was a neat story. The story of how Archie became a Christian. She shared this with me when we were talking about his life. She said, "I have vivid memories of it. My dad was in his probably early 40s at the time. And there was a gospel meeting that was going on at the Cape Fair Church of Christ. Still a church there today. Had been a lengthy meeting, probably at least a week, maybe even longer than that. A few years back, you know, sometimes meetings lasted over into a second week. But Archie had attended every night, and he had listened to that invitation every night. And then he said, "I can almost see there, or see standing by him, watching his hands as he grasped the seat in front of him, to the point that his knuckles turned white. But he stood there each night until that end and did not respond." Well, they decided to go ahead and carry the gospel meeting one more night. And the minister that was conducting the meeting, as well as the local minister, went down and visited Archie at the post office where he worked that day and said, "Archie, we're extending the meeting one more night. Won't you come and be with us again tonight?" Sure enough, Archie was there. The invitation song was led. Dina said, "I watched my dad let go of that seat that night and walk down, responding." He had one more chance to respond to the invitation. And of course, then ended up serving a life of service, or living a life of service, serving as a deacon for several years within the congregation there at Shelton. What a wonderful story, though. You have one chance this morning. Maybe you've been gripping the back of that seat for some reason. God has given you one more chance this morning as this invitation is offered. You know your plot. You know where you are in life. You know whether or not you need to respond. And if you do need to, I ask that you do that this morning. We'll pray for you. We'll try to encourage you in all that we can. It'll be an encouragement to us. Maybe it's something you can just take care of where you stand this morning, a private matter between you and God. I encourage you to do that. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?